Hey guys, I'm Alex.
And I'm Drew.
And today on the Two Man Comic Book Club podcast, we're taking a look at Star Wars Visions, Marvel's What If, and Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Let's go. We got a lot to talk about today, fellas. Can I call you fellas?
No.
No. Okay.
I'm just kidding.
It's gentlemen.
Fine. It's fine. That's worse.
Oh. Fellas and gentlemen.
How many people do we have here?
Just a 3-0.
Yeah.
We'll get this right out of the way. There will be heavy spoilers for all three of the aforementioned titles.
So...
Star Wars Visions, Marvel's What If.
What order are we going
and
in?
And Venom, I think in that order.
Say that
Visions,
again.
What If, Venom.
Okay, so yeah. If you're, since Disney Plus, like if you're a Disney Plus person, you're going to have easy access to the first two.
Yep.
But Venom might be the hardest to get into for some people. So that's why we're saving it for the end, so that if you don't want to be spoiled on that, you can listen right up to it. Or if you just don't care.
Yeah.
It'll be at the end.
The full seasons of both Star Wars Visions and Marvel's What If, as of yesterday, are up and at it. Visions was released all at once because they're all super short. But yesterday was the final episode of season one of Marvel's What If. And it was pretty cool, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Before we do that, have y'all been reading any comic books?
Not any comics. I did read a book that I thought might be worth
mentioning. Hear it. What you've been reading, yo?
I had to... take a picture of it because it's on my Kindle and I don't remember anything about it. Whenever I used to read physical books, I would know who I was reading. I would know what I was reading because it's right there on the cover every time I pick it up. But with a Kindle, it just goes straight to it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I don't even know it when I bought it. But I'm reading The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. It's interesting because there's this girl and she dies and... she shows up in this library that just goes on forever, and it's filled with books that are different versions of her life. The literal multiverse, like every possible decision she could have made different is represented in a book. And the whole point is she's supposed to go through and find one mm-hmm. that she would be content in. I'm about halfway through, so I don't know how it's going to end. I bought it because it said, a lot of the reviews said it was very heartwarming and just mm-hmm. like a... Ted Lasso kind of puts me in that mood of wanting to have good things. So I keep waiting for the ending to be like that. But it's interesting because like they literally talk about multiverse and the quantum mechanics and stuff like that. So I thought it was relevant, especially considering we're talking what if. But yeah, like she might in one be out of work, in another one a rock star. And another one, a glaciologist, you know, all these crazy things.
Interesting.
It's good. I'm enjoying it. So if that sounds interesting to you, it's available on Kindle. That's The Midnight Library by Matt Haig, H-A-I-G.
Yeah.
What about you?
I've read a bunch of comic books because I'm a good boy.
Yeah, I'm a bad boy.
You're a bad boy. Carrying on with my attempt at knocking out the Avengers so that I can keep on keeping on with... the X books that Jonathan Hickman and Squad are coming out with. It's just so much. I will say the Avengers books are really cool. Like I think I told you before on our last episode, at least to you, about the first form of the Avengers that Odin was leading. They've done some cool stuff with those. Just kind of like every once in a while, they'll just do a one shot and go back to kind of like just a look at, like, for instance, the Iron Fist from that era, and how did the first Iron Fist actually come to be. The Ghost Rider is also super important for this, both like in the past and in the present Avengers. It's a kid named Robbie Reyes. It's super cool. I really like this flavor of the Avengers. I mean, it still has like your big three, your Cap, Iron Man, and Thor, and then Captain Marvel and T'Challa are still there, so... just they're dealing with like the fallout of Celestials doing crazy things on the planet and then that upsetting Namor and the Atlanteans. So right now, Namor is doing so much crazy stuff that the Avengers are trying to take him out, and then the Winter Guard, which is like the Russian Avengers, are getting involved, and all this other stuff. It's turning into quite the... I mean, it's the Avengers. I feel like you kind of got to go big every time you're doing it. But also Avengers, I've been reading more of the Infinity Scroll and Comics Marvel Unlimited. Those are cool. But that's about it. I do have a question for you guys, though. This is what you've been watching, yo. Have either of you started watching Squid Game yet?
I finished it.
You finished it?
I just learned yesterday it's a show.
That it exists?
Not an actual game.
I think I've watched four. I've either watched three or four. It's really good. It's really spicy. If you don't like spicy stuff, this is not going to be for you. But it's really good. The cinematography is beautiful. Like, I can't stop staring at it. The colors are super rich. I also am viewing it under the... Well, I guess you would be too, under like the best of circumstances. Like, my screen just handles Dolby Vision content really well, and it looks... very nice on the eyes, but also the story is great. Without spoiling anything, did you like it all? Or
yeah, I did. I took me just a couple days to finish it, and I really enjoyed it. It was. I'm surprised that it's doing so well.
Yeah,
it's. I think it's outdone Bridgerton as far as Netflix goes, and
it's pretty colossal. Like, it's kind of the hot thing to be watching right now, which I usually don't. Not necessarily. Unsubscribe to that sort of thing, but I'm definitely not like at the front of the line to watch all the newest stuff that's coming out, and I just happened to click on one just to see, and I loved it.
I don't think I've opened Netflix in like 3 weeks because I've only been watching The Big Bang Theory on HBO Max because I've never had it, and there's like three or four seasons I never watched, so I'm finishing it. That and then the Disney Plus stuff I think that's it. Like, I haven't even opened Netflix.
This will be a good reason for you to justify that price hike in the premium Netflix 4K plan that you got. It's really good. I will say, based on some reading I've done and some tweets I've seen, you should watch it in the native language that it was captured in, which is Korean, and use English subtitles, because I heard that the dub was... kind of butchers some elements of the story. I don't know if that's true or if you heard something similar.
It is. And what I've heard from native Korean speakers, the translation, it kind of misses some of the nuance of the writing.
Dang, it sucks. Crazy because so far, I mean, I've enjoyed it.
It's great. I loved it as it was, but it looks like I'll have to learn Korean and watch it again.
Well,
Kamsahamnida.
What does that mean?
Thank you. Because I'm a first degree black belt, and we had to learn a few things.
Ah.
I think. And then, Chumanail, you're welcome. You want to hear me count to 10?
Please.
Hana, dual, set, net, dasi, yasit, ilgap, yol. Ahap, yol.
Drew can't count to 10 in Korean.
I only made it to 8.
Yeah. It's really cool. I think you should watch it if you like dark storytelling. It's definitely violent. So. Know that going
this
in.
This doesn't sound anything like what I've come across. People are like, they're just playing kids' games.
They are. If you lose, you die.
This took a turn.
Yeah. That's an oversimplification of it. But it's really good. It's also just like, if you appreciate cinema, like the art of capturing a cinematic image, you will enjoy... the way your eyeballs feel, even when there's blood on the screen. What about you, Tori? You been reading anything of interest?
I just received as a birthday present Invisible Kingdom.
Ah.
I haven't finished it yet, but...
You'll have to let me know how it is, because I'm genuinely curious. That's G. Willow Wilson, the creator of Miss Marvel and other great works.
Yes, and thank you to... Alex, for that present.
You're welcome.
I'm a bad friend. I didn't even realize it was Torrance's birthday until I think my computer reminded me.
So. That's how I always find out. That's how I found out it was my birthday.
Hey, Torrance, I got you a Sprite.
Actually, that Tori bought.
Tori, he bought it, yeah.
Cool. Any other what you've been readings or watchings or things of interest? There's
no.
Let's see. There's some stuff I want to see that's come out. No Time to Die is out in theaters. Really want to go see that. Dune's out. Oh, is it out?
I don't know if it's out, but
it's soon.
It's soon. I think it was like maybe next week. Foundation. Have you guys watched any of that?
I haven't.
Have you ever read Foundation?
Apple TV.
No.
Okay. I've almost read it a few times. It's Isaac Asimov, right?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I just never did. And then I found out there was a TV show coming out. I haven't watched it yet. I thought about it, but I'm kind of like, yeah, let's just finish Big Bang Theory so I don't have to think about it anymore. And Ted Lasso tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then I'll check out Foundation. I'm curious. It just from the graphics, you know, that you see on the thing, it looks pretty epic. So I'm excited. I've never read any Isaac Asimov, but I know it's like gold standard for some people. So
especially like sci-fi stuff. Right?
Yeah. So I'm excited for it.
It looks great. But I can't say, yeah. I know in theaters, those are the two big ones. I want to see No Time to Die. Daniel Craig is my James Bond for sure.
Who's yours?
Lazenby, George Lazenby.
Mine.
I'm just kidding.
I've always been a Roger Moore guy.
There's a big asterisk on yours, though.
I've never seen any.
You've never seen Daniel Craig as James Bond.
So maybe that would change things.
So, yeah, you should. Just watch the first one. Like, you'll know right away if that's your flavor of stuff. Mm-hmm. Casino Royale is one of my favorite movies. It's super cool.
Which one was George Lazenby in?
I think he only did one.
That sounds right.
And I can't remember which one it was.
Me either.
Okay. I just, that name has always stuck out to me, and he doesn't look like a Bond to me.
Yeah. And then Dune. I'm looking forward to seeing that one as well. I think I need to read the book because I haven't seen it. But it just, again, it looks super cinematic. Dennis, is it Villeneuve? Is that how you say his last name? The director. He also did Arrival and Blade Runner 2049 and a bunch of other awesome, super fun to look at films. I like film. Cinematography, long walks on the beach, pina coladas.
And your wife.
And my wife. Good save.
My wife. My wife this. My wife that. My wife has an inner ear infection.
What is that off of?
Seinfeld.
That's right. I have a lot of my wife would be upset that I didn't know that.
Apparently Seinfeld is now on Netflix.
Yeah.
I guess I did click into Netflix and I saw Squid Game and I saw Seinfeld, and I was like, I don't want to watch any of this right now.
So it's dangerous when things like that become available on streaming services. There's so much new content. You get in trouble quick if you start going back and reminiscing and being all nostalgic.
They also do the thing that they ruined, how they ruined The Simpsons.
The aspect ratio, right?
Yeah, the aspect ratio is messed up. It's not their original format.
Yeah, so the reason that's a big deal, if you didn't know, this happened in The Simpsons. Sometimes there are jokes or gags on the outer edges of a frame that's in 4:3 for older style TVs, and if you crop in, you're cutting off the top and the bottom of that frame. So there was I think the popular Simpsons one was they were in a beer factory, and they had three different versions of beer. And they were like walking through showing people how they were made. And it showed this like elaborate system of the beer funneling from all these different things. And then it was all just one type of beer going out three different funnels into the thing. And they were calling it something different. And it was just chopped off. So you never saw that. The gag was gone. I think I haven't seen the instance of what happens in Seinfeld, but I can see how you're losing some of that stuff if you change the original aspect ratio. Anything else? Or are we going to jump into Star Wars Visions? Star Wars Visions is what happens when Lucasfilm hands the keys to the Star Wars toy bin to the top, well, I don't know if they're the top, but seven major anime studios and says, make whatever you want to make. It doesn't have to be canon. You can do whatever you want. And it's released on Disney Plus. They're all relatively short. The longest one is 22 minutes long. Most of them are in the 13 to 15 minute range. And I overall really liked them a lot.
Hey, me too.
How you've seen all of them?
Yes.
Sorry, I just hit my mic. I've seen all of them. How many have you seen?
Just the duel.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Lucky for you, I think that's the best one.
Yeah.
As far as...
They sure picked a good one to start with.
I think that was on purpose. Yeah. They were like, let's... You know, if you give them one that in the beginning, they're going to be fishing for more like mm-hmm. that. There are like three of them that I think are above the rest, and then the rest of them are good, cool, little... Mm-hmm. I mean, what they did really well is they just told very concise, effective short stories. All of them are one-offs. They're not connected to each other at all, other than the fact that they're Star Wars. But, mm-hmm. I mean, they don't have some sort of through line or theme or even style. Most of them are stylistically pretty different from each other. So let's start with The Duel, because I think even if Tori finished it, that'd probably be his favorite one. Was it yours? Like,
I don't know. I tried to think about it. Do you want me to just say my favorite three?
Yeah, let's hear it.
The Duel is definitely in the top three. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I have a favorite, but I liked The Duel, The Elder, and The Ninth Jedi.
Yeah.
So
those are... More or less mine as well.
Yeah. And I'm thinking maybe the very last one is up there.
It finished stronger than it started.
Yeah. And I had a question for you about that one, but mm-hmm. we can get to that in a second. The other ones were good. They were more fun, you know, or like the one with Obi-Wan, you know, that one took a while. It
kind of Pinocchio-esque.
I warmed up to it.
Yeah.
But like I had a hard time even concentrating on the beginning of it because it was such a departure from all the other ones that just felt more like, all right, this isn't for kids. This is like a legit story. Whereas TOB1 totally felt like it was just for kids.
Right. That's you're talking about the robot kid
yeah.
who wants to be a Jedi mm-hmm. robot boy. I like that one a lot. That was cool. Let's just start with The Duel. I legitimately think, and I've said this to both of you at one point, I think that The Duel is going to win. Would that be an Oscar or an Emmy?
Emmys for TV.
Right. I should know if Disney Plus, I guess it's a show more than a movie. So, yeah, I think it'll win an Emmy for something. If not storytelling, like a short form. I don't know. If Kobe Bryant can win an Emmy for I Love Basketball short cartoon, I feel like this for sure. I see no way that it's not nominated. It is so visually awesome to look at. It's like this. I've kind of been describing it as this retro... neo-western noir samurai type thing, and it's like 14 minutes long. It's super short, and there's this Ronin passing through town with his R unit. I don't know what type of R2 or R3 unit he has, but it's got like this bamboo hat on. It's all in black and white except for the lightsaber duels. It's just so cool. He kind of stumbles upon this town, and he's just drinking coffee in this hut on the outskirts of it, and... This were they rebel or no? They weren't. They were.
I can't remember.
Just some group of not gangsters. Is it saying?
It says renegade Jedi sect called or the Sith.
It was right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ronin. Sorry. Never mind. Yeah, the Sith.
Yeah, it was like a Sith-led fact of people coming to just raid a village and take him over, and at one point this Sith villain comes out. And has this like lightsaber umbrella thing and is just wrecking up on everybody. And this Ronin, who is obviously kind of our hero of this thing, comes out to confront her. He has no business in this town. And I think was it a she? They didn't really say the Sith.
I think it was.
I think it was a she. I'm assuming maybe that's wrong. She was like, she could tell something was different about him. And she did the cool thing where she took out her saber and, like, tried to attack him, and he caught it with the force in his hand, which is, like, this cool trope that we've seen in kung fu films before, the classic catching the samurai sword. But doing that with the force and a lightsaber was awesome. And she was, like, a Jedi. I haven't killed a Jedi in so long and all this stuff. And then he puts his hand on his saber to pull it out, which is sheath, which is really cool because it's, again, samurai-esque. And pulls it out to block her, and his saber is red. And he says something to the effect of, like, unfortunately, I am no Jedi. And it's crazy awesome duel, lots of cool effects. He ends up doing some I don't know how you describe it. He pushes a button, like, to get his R unit mm-hmm. to come and, like, fire all these missiles and kind of save him in the end. And then also the trope, is this kind of a Western trope that you used before? Like, once this tea kettle is whistling, you know, or I need this R2 unit fixed by the time of that. I think I've seen that in some old Westerns or maybe some old.
Really? I haven't seen that. That's interesting.
I need to do some research and actually see. I may be just making that up, but that seemed like a familiar thing to me. And it was just really interesting. We don't know if he was like a Jedi before and lost that status, or if he was a Sith, or sort of like an anti-hero version of it. But it was super cool. You absolutely should go and watch this one if you're going to watch any of them, just to get an idea, because I would watch a whole season of just,
yeah. I mean,
just this guy.
If you like it, just sit, block out like an hour and a half. I think that's all you need
to watch all of them. They're super short.
All of them. Though I watched like six or five of them, maybe one after another. And it did kind of like, I noticed I was paying less attention. So if you have time to watch one or two a day, I think you'd be able to actually notice things. Cause I started watching and I got a little bit jaded about some of it. I was like, it's all kind of the same story. For some of the later ones, I'm like using the same gimmicks. But what's they're tough still
is,
great.
Yeah. What's tough is that I think all the studios, and this would be hard for me, I don't know if I'd be able to resist this, were told that they could play with lightsabers. Mm-hmm. You know, like, are you really going to pass up when Lucasfilm says, here, do whatever you want?
Because it definitely becomes like, especially like the second half of the block, it's mm-hmm. just like, oh, okay, it's another lightsaber story. Okay,
yeah, it's another Jedi story. It's another Jedi. But
they all end up taking them in different directions. So mm-hmm. like,
yeah,
just look past that.
Yeah, I will say, episode 2 was probably my least favorite. That was the one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. By the way, Tori will list some of these in a second. There's pretty impressive voice acting cast on a lot of these, I know. What were some of that you said earlier?
Well, in that one, the second one, Tatooine Rhapsody, you also have Bobby Moynihan is in there with some other people I don't recognize. Maybe they're well-known Shelby Young, Mark Thompson. These are the American actors,
right?
Or English actors,
right? Because they did two different sets of voice casts for these. Lots of cool voice actors.
Do you want to talk about the one thing we noticed in the duel while we're kind of on the subject of voice actors?
Go ahead.
So, me and Alex thought the elder. Jumping ahead a little bit, but since we're talking about the actors, when the elder opened up, I heard it and I was just like, that sounds like Harrison Ford.
I thought the exact same thing.
And yeah, and it turns out it wasn't. And I did I pulled up IMDb and I looked at it, and I just looked at the front page of it, and it was a bunch of people I didn't know, and so I didn't scroll past it. And Alex texted me, he's like, "Did you know that was David Harbour?" And I was like, "Wait, what?"
Yeah.
So and then I got on there and scrolled, and I was like, "Oh wow, okay." And then I went back and listened to it, and I was like, "Okay, I hear it now."
Yeah. But once you know who you're listening to, it makes more sense.
It sounded like a younger, like Blade Runner era Harrison Ford to me, just kind of a soft-spoken, you know. It wasn't the boisterous Han Solo.
Right.
But I'm wondering if part of it was the fact that we opened up in a cockpit that looked a lot like the Millennium Falcon's cockpit. So, like, my mind was already going to Han Solo.
Right.
And there was this voice that kind of sounded like Harrison Ford. So I just thought it was funny that we both thought that.
In all of the episodes, lots of just winks to classic moments in the Star Wars. Even, I can't remember which one, somebody saying he was their father. There was just a lot, not like heavy-handed or ham-fisted necessarily, but just in passing, kind of like, we're in the Star Wars universe right now. You know what I'm talking about? Anyway, backtracking. Number 2 was maybe one of my lesser favorites.
Once I realized...
Not to say it was bad.
It was just like showing, you know, not everybody turns into a superhero Jedi.
And I appreciate it for that. It was not a Jedi story at all. Actually, that one had... the main one that actually had some characters, like Jabba the Hutt is in there, and then some of his crew. Was Boba Fett also?
Yeah, he was there.
Yeah, so that was probably the closest you get to like recognizing characters. Definitely a more lighthearted story.
I thought it was a nice answer. Like after you watch The Duel, you're thinking that everything's going to be like that, and then they give you that one, you're like, okay, so...
It is a nice contrast.
You're like, you don't know what's going to happen.
Cleanser. Yeah.
It was like Willy Wonka, you know, mm-hmm. saying, I'll do whatever I can as long as you let me do this
right.
ninja roll in the beginning so that they
right.
know that everything's on the table.
So since we just talked about the Elder, we got a few minutes before we take a quick break. The Elder was a cool one. We have a master and his apprentice going to this this planet to find out where this kind of like evil presence was, is kind of what you get. And they split up just to kind of help these villagers get to a space. And the apprentice comes across, quote unquote, the Elder, who is a Sith Lord. And they get in a fight pretty quickly. The apprentice is not quite as experienced and he gets hurt, though he doesn't die. And then it starts raining and the Elder just sits down because the master, I don't know if they said his name, but I can't remember. Do you have it in the Elder?
The name of the Elder?
Name of the master. Guy that David Harbour voiced.
Tajin.
Tajin. Okay, so he senses immediately when his Padawan gets attacked and goes to find that Elder, and then they have a pretty epic battle, and he ends up winning. But you get the sense that this Elder, whoever it was like kind of only lost because he was very, very, very old. Like, they made it look like maybe if it had been a different time or the outcome would have been different. So that one was super cool. The Duel, the Elder, those were two of our favorites. And then the Ninth Jedi, correct?
Yeah.
Do you want to walk through some of that story?
So that one was like, we had I can't remember exactly where it started, but basically a message was sent out to bring a bunch of Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And they make, because like this was after the time that the Jedi had fallen. And like people had forgotten how to make lightsabers, but there was this saber smith mm-hmm. down on the planet who had found enough kyber crystals to make, you know, eight or nine lightsabers. And the interesting thing was that these were different. Normally, like the kyber crystal, like determines what the color is, I think.
Right.
Or like certain, there's a whole lore behind it. But in this one, like he makes it to where like your being is mm-hmm. what determines it. And his daughter is playing with one. And it's like
see-through transparent. Yeah,
it's like black, but like not. And it changes length based on who it is. And she was just like, oh, I guess I'm not very strong in the Force because there's no color. But so anyway, they get attacked. And he's like, you got to go take these to Margrave. I think that was his name. And so she takes all this bundle of lightsabers and puts them out there, and they all pick them up because there's a bunch of Jedi that had showed up, and all of them turn red.
Yeah, except there was one.
We saw one earlier, and he didn't light it up, and Margrave comes out, and she's like, yeah, I knew that some of our Jedi had gone missing, so I was waiting to try to flush you out. Mm-hmm. And so then they get into this epic fight. And during that fight, the Ninth Jedi, which is this girl, it turns out, because one of them had gone missing and she's out there fighting, her lightsaber turns green.
Yeah.
Like she has the power. And basically they're able to strike down these
Sith.
Yeah.
Esque.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like the Clone Worlds and Clone Wars and Rebels kind of change it. Back in the olden day, I remember like the Sith, there's two.
Mm-hmm.
The Master and the Apprentice, like that's it.
Right.
And then you get Clone Wars and Rebels and there's like tons of like Sithlings.
Right.
So I don't know exactly what the deal is with these, but anyway, they strike them down and they kind of team up. The three, or one of them was kind of on the fence and his turns purple in the end instead of red. And they go together and they're like, well, let's go find more. So, I mean, it was really neat just to kind of see the evolution of the girl from like, I'm not very good at this to like kicking butt in these fights.
Yeah,
so
it was a cool episode.
It was just, I felt like it, we saw a bunch of different like landscapes and everything. Mm-hmm. It felt like Star Wars compacted into 12 minutes or whatever it was to me.
Right.
So I think that one was, I really liked it.
Agreed. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. Just a closing note on that episode Drew was just talking about. There was a nice moment where one of the, I'm calling them Siths for lack of a better term, one of the bad guys where their blades turned red unexpectedly to us. He was like kind of on the fence a little bit and then his blade turned purple. I don't know if you captured that. Like he was, he went a little bit of Mace Windu vibe, kind of a,
He had said that he was on the fence.
Right.
He wasn't sure. So
yeah, I enjoyed that touch. A shout out also to the episode. Is it called like the brother and the sister or the twins?
The twins.
The twins was a pretty cool one.
That
almost rock opera-esque.
Yeah. I was like, oh, so we're just completely ignoring the vacuum of space for this one.
They went really anime
on
that one. But I liked it because it was like unapologetically the genre that it was.
And it's pretty intense to ride, like stand on an X-Wing.
As it goes into hyperspace.
Yeah. Like that was...
While holding a lightsaber above and like slashing through. It was ridiculous.
There were a lot of scenes in that that made me think like they were really trying to throw back to like the original Star Wars posters. Like there were a lot of like stances that made me think of Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. That one was really cool.
That was the one at the very end there. It's like, we are twins. We're twins. And I was just like, is this a wink to Luke and Leia? You know,
right.
That could have been if they'd been created in a lab.
Yeah. You said also you had a question about the last episode.
The very last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it yet?
Did
you finish? Okay. Did you start to get the vibe at the very end? I was like, oh, this is just a reframing of Anakin and
Padme? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Heavy inspiration taken there. They,
except that he knew and he walked away. It wasn't like,
yeah,
you're going to help me. You're going to help me heal her. And he's like, no, she's dead. You know, instead, it was just like he knew and walked away. So that makes me think this dude's worse.
Yeah, even more evil. Yeah, there was a Jedi helping his love interest character take back her father's throne and her father's sister. Was that who it was? I think it was.
I think so.
It was a sister. She was a Sith. And she killed her, I guess, niece.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jedi basically was like, if you
actually no, it was him.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was having,
because they had one of the masks on.
So he was having throughout. There was a theme of him having this nightmare of him fighting these people with these weird masks on, and then the Sith put those masks on all his comrades, including his love interest, and he, in this stress panic moment, ended up killing her.
Yeah,
and he was like, If you bring her back, I'll join you. I'll be your apprentice. I'll stand at your side. Which we get more of the N2s there.
That's exactly the Pat or Palpatine type thing. And I was just like, oh, but this is what happens if it actually.
Yeah, and she brings the Sith brings his love back immediately, and he walks off with her, and it just ends. It's pretty dark.
It's just like, oh, okay,
yeah,
all right.
Again, they're all little one shots. They're not like some, you know. Almost all of them start in media res, and we just kind of go, and then we end at this little spot where it could be a series, and we're just kind of capturing a little peek into this this universe. It's actually, how's this for a segue? It's not unlike what I think a lot of people thought What If was going to be.
Yeah.
Let's jump into that. Marvel's What If just finished season 1, episode 9 came out yesterday. Today is Thursday, October 7th. Oh, my God. Where is time? It is still March 2020.
Yeah.
General thoughts. General thoughts. On this series. So it finished really strong for me.
Yeah.
And also unexpectedly for me.
Yeah. See, I didn't. You made the comment about bringing together the Avengers across the multiverse.
Yeah.
I never saw that coming.
Spoiler alert, that's what happened.
We already said earlier, we're spoiling. I did not expect that to happen. And then it did, and I was like, oh, wow, I'm a dunce, you know, that I didn't see that coming. But it was, I enjoyed, you know, an episode here, an episode there.
Right.
I didn't expect it all to be brought back together. I really thought this was just going to be purely episodic, like, all right, we got this happening. Let's jump to another multiverse.
Yeah.
Which was cool because I was thinking we were going to ultimately get the payoff of it coming together in a Secret Wars thing. But
right.
They sort of like, I don't know. I can see them definitely pulling from it in the MCU proper, but also just considering it its own little buttoned up package.
Yeah. I'll just fill you in for those you haven't seen it or just want to another summary. There's all these what feel like up until the last two episodes, the last three episodes, I should say,
2.15.
Yeah. all these kind of one shots. They feel like true comic book one shots. Like they're here's just a self-contained thing. Some of them better than others. And then we get to 7, which is Party Thor. And it's kind of like probably the silliest episode by far.
Yeah.
But it actually works in the context of everything as a nice palate cleanser for how dark the next two get. Mm-hmm. So at the very end of Party Thor, which is essentially Thor lands in Las Vegas and is partying so hard that it's becoming an issue. And Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel, comes down to get rid of him. And there's kind of a come-to-peace where Loki gets involved. There's a, I don't know. It's a whole thing. There's some nice moments in that other than just the comedic relief is we get to see how powerful Carol Danvers is. Because I feel like even though we've seen some of that in Endgame, like there's still like, no, seriously, Carol Danvers is Earth's mightiest hero. Like she's the best that Earth has to offer. At the very end of that, though, this was it like a reality or something? He warps in this Ultron who has Infinity Stones in his chest, and then his face of his robotic head like lifts up and it's Vision underneath it. So this is like we got a little bit of like, oh, what if Ultron actually got a hold of Vision like he was trying to in Age of Ultron? And then got a hold of the Infinity Stones. And it just ends. And we were like, for that episode, self-contained, it just felt like very quickly they turned the dial up to 12 in the last 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It was like, Party Thor, Party Thor, Party Thor. Oh, what if Ultron came here and he had Vision and the Infinity Stones? Credits.
Yeah.
Super quick. But then they actually play off of that in episode 8. So we see...
What if Ultron won?
What if Ultron won? And it was so good. Probably...
So good.
I can't tell if that one or the Doctor Strange one was my favorite. Maybe the Doctor Strange one.
Like, the Doctor Strange hit me because it was like... It was a movie wrapped into 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And I loved it because I was taking it as a one-off.
Sure.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. The Ultron, like, I knew it was coming from something, and I was just like, "Are we have to keep going with this?" So, I think I hold them both on the top, but for different reasons.
Yeah, they're different for sure. The Doctor Strange one ended, and he lost, which it kind of had Infinity War vibes. Yeah. He didn't get what he was trying to do. He was trying to keep using the Time Stone to go back to a different time or a different reality where. He either didn't lose his hands or he didn't lose Rebecca. And he started doing like the darkest of the arts and the black magic and all this stuff. And he ended up in this little pocket dimension by himself because he ended up destroying everything. And it just kind of ends. We've had little winks all the way through it of the Watcher kind of like not interfering at all, but like just... Maybe somebody somehow is like cosmically aware of him slightly. Like Doctor Strange interacted with him at the end of that episode because he was so powerful that he could see that the Watcher exists outside of all these multiverses or all these universes. And then in the Ultron episode, long story short, he conquers everything. He conquers all these planets. He's just all powerful. He's way worse than he actually kills Thanos very quickly in this episode. And he's just like sitting there in space. He's conquered everything. He's fulfilled his purpose as he thinks. And he's sitting there and the Watcher's narrating all this. Mm-hmm. And then Ultron becomes aware that the Watcher's narrating him. And with the power of the Infinity Stones breaks out of the universe, out of the multiverse. Time travel?
I don't know. Just
he breaks out into the plane where the Watcher is, and this awesome battle ensues because he's like, oh, no, he breaks out of his own universe. That's what it is, because now he's aware that there's a multiverse, and he's going to go and clean all of it. You know, he's trying to end everything, which leads to the Watcher fighting him for a while, who is super powerful as well, maybe more so powerful. They're in the same ballpark, I think. And it ends with him deciding, okay, we got to get together a group of significant others that can that can fight this thing. So that's how we get to the final episode, which is what if the Watcher broke his oath and didn't refrain from interfering?
What was the title of the last episode? Do you remember?
Do you have that?
What if the Watcher broke his oath?
There it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't read that at all.
Yeah. So he recruits all of the main characters from every episode. So we get Star-Lord, T'Challa, mm-hmm. Agent Carter, Captain America, Party Thor, Killmonger, after he killed Iron Man and became the Black Panther. Who am I missing? Black Widow from the sixth episode.
Doctor Strange.
There's probably more, and I'm forgetting them somehow. We see...
Did you say Gamora?
Oh, yeah. We didn't even get a Gamora.
It was just like...
He just pulled this Gamora character from a different reality that we hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
Which was kind of cool. It left like, there's more that we didn't explore. And then, did you see the Iron Man in that world, too?
Yeah.
Like, he had like a pseudo Hulkbuster.
Did it kind of look to you like Thor Ragnarok color scheme? Uh-huh. Like, I'm wondering if maybe in that universe, he ended up on that planet.
Sakaar and had to fight. Yeah. Anyway, he pulls him through. There's awesome stuff that ensues, and the Avengers save the day. Not without more, though. We know there's going to be a season two, and there's absolutely set up. It ends with Killmonger stealing all that stuff from Ultron, right? Or did they stop him from doing that?
Well,
I can't remember.
They finally track him down, and because they're trying to fight Ultron and get Shuri has the Infinity Stone Crusher,
right?
And or not Shuri, Gamora. Sorry. Yeah. And so they're fighting on the planet that we didn't realize at first, I don't think, but it was the planet that Black Widow and Clint Barton
from
have been on.
Episode six,
and they're trying to fight him and get an Infinity Stones one at a time and try to destroy him. But like he all of a sudden becomes aware, and like they do start to get them all, and that's whenever we learn, oh, every Infinity Stone is very specific to its universe.
Right.
So her Smasher couldn't do it. But during the fight, like somehow they all end up getting off of there. They get one or two, and this whole time, Killmonger has had an Ultron head that he's like looking at him, like one of these things is
they
not like
winked
the other.
It, like, do we trust him?
Yeah, and so like at some point, like they kind of knock him out. Oh, because Black Widow's the whole thing that she was trying to get to do. She has the Hydra dude, in an arrow that they tried to.
Yeah.
Take Ultron out a long time ago, but she basically shoots it right at his eye, and with a little alley-oop from
Agent Carter.
And he basically is knocked out, and that's whenever Killmonger, I think, is able to get the stones, and he's like turns himself into Ultron armor Killmonger,
right?
And they're just like, wait, what? And then like, but Ultron comes too, and they're like using force powers to try to get these things. And at that point, you're like, man, we've lost.
Yeah.
Because now there's two bad guys. And then Strange steps up and he's like, wait, we were never supposed to win.
Right.
We just needed to get the stones out of his hands.
Right.
And then he pulls his sorcerer stuff and puts them into a little pocket dimension, a little snow globe.
It looks like a little snow globe with them like eternally fighting over these stones.
And that's just kind of...
And him and the Watcher are tasked with making sure they don't break out.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it ends, but we know there's going to be more.
Yeah, and then they kind of after that, or maybe right before, they make a little comment like, well, all right, we've got to put all you back right where we brought you out, which kind of makes sense from the standpoint of the same logic for the Infinity Stones and Endgame. We're going to put you right back where you came from. And everybody goes, and the last one standing there is Black Widow. And you're just like, do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah, do something crazy.
And she's like, I don't want to go back to my world because...
Well, yeah, it was the world that Ultron crushed everything. There was nothing left.
Yeah, so the Watcher's like, there's a world that lost their widow, and I'm sitting there like, oh,
yeah,
do it, do it, do it. And They put it in, and for a minute, I thought it was. I thought it was ours.
Yeah.
Because there's like Captain America's fighting on one of the helicarriers mm-hmm. and everything.
It looks very Avengers 1-esque.
Yeah. And then I was kind of like, wait a minute, this doesn't line up.
Mm-hmm.
But then we realized it was the world where Loki had eventually taken over
right.
the Earth. Mm-hmm. So anyway, she's out there. But it does stand to reason there could be other Watchers and other Black Widows
mm-hmm.
and other Gamoras.
Yeah,
that could be getting the same treatment.
Like, yeah,
hey, we're just going to drop you in to whatever the MCU's number is.
Right. So that finale, the whole season did a couple of things. First, we got to see the Watcher interfere, mm-hmm. which was pretty quick. I mean, I'm fine with it. It falls close to the unfortunate thing that happens where we're like getting big bad villains too quickly or big moments too quickly. You know, I like the slow ball. You know, we already saw the Watcher break his oath of interfering. You know, what if that was like season 3, you know, and he finally interfered, just really holding on to that tension before the release. But now we get to see, okay, what's going to be the ramifications for that? He interfered pretty drastically in several universes. And we also got to see that this multiverse thing could potentially bring back characters that we've lost. Mm-hmm. That's a very delicate thing, I think, making sure that they don't cheapen major sacrifices a la Tony Stark offing himself. That's a little dark, isn't it, compared to what he actually did, sacrificing himself.
Yes.
Yeah, he did not off himself. But yeah, super cool. I really liked it. The art style was cool. This is a sad thing. It came out from one of the producers that the plan or one of the plans after this was to do an actual long-running series of Star-Lord T'Challa with Chadwick Boseman before he passed, and they scrapped that after his passing. Yeah, because apparently he had a lot of fun, and episode 9 is the final Black Panther T'Challa thing that we'll get, which I guess is
every time he spoke, I was like, God, it's still him.
Yeah.
How long ago was this all finished?
Yeah, they worked on that for a while. It must have just like, all right, come in and do all your episodes today. I imagine if they're really prepared, they can do some voice acting like that. Mm-hmm. What'd you think?
No, I was good. I seriously expected it to be, this is just going to be a little fun thing. Introduce the multiverse. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be anything of consequence. I don't know why I thought that, but I did. I just thought it was going to be, we're going to show you some things.
Yeah.
And they're all unrelated. So enjoy.
Yeah, well, I think it's easy to be like, oh, it's a cartoon. They'll play with some characters we like. But I think this all is just the medium is different, but the multiverse is the same, if that makes sense. So I don't know if the general public is ready for a crossover quite like that. Maybe they will be after some Doctor Strange and some Spider-Man, like where we start seeing some...
The words multiverse have barely been uttered on live action, you know, so
it can be jarring when that's like that happens. A very well-known thing, though Drew, I don't think would have seen any of this. SpongeBob would go back and forth from animated to not live action, but like suddenly he would be an actual sponge laying on a beach somewhere and somebody would pick him up and interact with him and they'd still be talking, but it would be like animation to some dude with a camera. It was just like, it was funny and like kind of, but it can be jarring in the context of or the MCU, we're taking this serious, you know, versus like suddenly if something happens in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness where he slaps the Scarlet Witch through the multiverse and one of the she goes through is where Ultron's taking over everything and she's temporarily animated, I think it'd be cool, but they just have to balance that to a certain extent to make sure that it lands on its feet, if that makes sense. I know you haven't seen quite all of it. Shout out to Tori for just letting us spoil all this for him in the name of the podcast. Of the ones you saw, did you enjoy it? Or are you still going to try to knock them out?
I'm still going to watch them. I have to say that I didn't watch any of them.
Oh, my God. That is insane.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why. I just had other things that I was watching, and
you're just too busy.
I'm really not. Oh. I've got time to do it.
Yeah. Just knock one a night. Just knock it out. You'll be done next time we record.
And then maybe since you already know where it's going, you can give us the insight after you've watched it for things that you caught that maybe we missed since we weren't looking.
Yeah, I mean, we spoiled big picture stuff, but you definitely, like, we didn't, like, go into the plot.
I don't feel like this is has been spoiled to the point where I don't feel like I need to watch it.
Right.
I feel like I would still enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of context stuff. And really just, like, we didn't talk about what happens in the zombies episode or anything.
Yeah, I saw
like
that on there, and I was really curious what that was about.
Yeah, there's that was one of the few that actually we had some Peter Parker, some Spider-Man.
That's right.
It was cool. I'm excited there's going to be more. And I love that we still got to kind of play in the MCU world, but with a new medium. It just works. I'm curious to see more of these characters.
How close are we to the next MCU drop?
I believe Eternals. It's either Eternals or Hawkeye. One of those two. They're close to each other. Can you look that up? I'm hyped for both of those. I think Eternals is going to be another Guardians of the Galaxy type thing. Like, people are going to fall in love with it. Because Guardians is still a favorite for a lot of people. Go ahead.
I thought Eternals was coming out
November 11th or something, 3rd?
That's what 11th? I thought, but I don't see it on this list because the first thing it has that shows up is Spider-Man No Way Home.
Oh, no, that's in December.
Yeah.
I think it's 11, and I think Hawkeye is the 3rd.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Eternals is going to be the next one, November 5th, and then,
okay,
then Spider-Man.
Where does Hawkeye come out, if you can find that? I can't remember. Well, also, Hawkeye is from the trailer. I don't know if you've seen that or not. It's,
I still haven't watched that.
It has some Christmassy vibes to it.
Oh, okay.
So I could see them making that a holiday release. Oh, it's going to be so cool. I mean, if you're an avid listener, you know that we're covering Hawkeye right now as well, or maybe just finished covering Hawkeye, depending on when you listen to this. And it will be a little bit different flavor than the Hawkeye you see in the comics, just because of the nature of how they developed him in the MCU. But it's going to be cool. Do you have a date on that?
Hawkeye is November 24th.
Okay, so we get the 5th for Eternals, Thanksgiving weekend-ish for Hawkeye, and then like 3 weeks later, you get No Way Home. So we have an MCU-filled holiday, and I'm here for it. I think it's going to be freaking awesome.
Nice.
What the hell else are we covering on this podcast?
Well, we've got about 7 minutes before we have to break. I wonder if we can cover Venom in that.
I think we can.
I think so, too.
If that doesn't tell you how we felt about it.
Well, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part about going to watch Venom happened before and after the movie.
Yeah.
So if that tells you anything. The Ghostbusters trailer
looks pretty dope.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I saw a trailer for that 13 years ago.
You did.
But anyway, I just got to see it again and I just got chills. And Dan Aykroyd answering that phone at the end, I was just like,
yeah, that wasn't in the first one, I don't believe.
No, it wasn't.
And then Paul Rudd is just awesome, right? Like, it's going to be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just excited for that.
It looks cool.
I mean, I enjoyed the one that they did not too long ago. But I'm really excited for this.
I'm laughing because this is the Venom review.
Yeah.
We've talked more about Ghostbusters already.
Anyway, So I was really excited for that. The movie happened. I enjoyed the movie. Like, let me also say, I've heard many, many, many people say, don't bother, don't watch it. So I went in with my bar as low as could be.
Yeah.
And I walked away thinking, I think I'd watch it again. That was all right.
It was just fine.
Yeah.
My
wife said, there were times when it was hard to watch because, like, when Carnage started doing his thing, it was just kind of grotesque to look at.
Yeah.
And, like, just some of the action.
Yeah, Katie also doesn't like just the nature of Venom existing, like how he works. It's a little physically interesting, right?
And I mean, Carnage is, like, to the nines. Compared to that.
Right.
So.
I would say, and tell me if you agree or disagree or in the ballpark, that this movie is maybe 5% better than the first Venom.
I don't know.
Which is, might as well say a tie. It might come down to just personal preferences.
I felt like, I don't know, because Venom, is Venom funny in the comics?
Sometimes. But his problem is, the main problem for me for Venom is that he doesn't have a Spider-Man right now.
Yeah. Or.
He will. Spoiler alert again.
That was the second favorite part.
Yeah, so you can go ahead and tell him. The mid-credits scene.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I wondered. I was like, okay, so they've got to bring Tom Hardy into the MCU somehow.
We knew it was going to happen eventually.
I mean, I saw a picture of him wearing a No Way Home hat one time, making me wonder if will we see him in that. Mm-hmm. So I was curious, are we going to find out that this world was in the MCU all along? No. Eddie Brock and Venom go on vacation. Mm-hmm. They're on a beach, you know, in this rundown place, and they're just sitting there. And Venom starts talking about, oh, let me tell you about all the different universes. And just like, and somehow.
Well, he actually starts talking about the hive mind,
which
is all this information that he and the, that's kind of like wink at the comics. Like there's this massive hive mind of symbiotes.
Yeah. You don't even know.
You don't even know your brain can comprehend. He's like, let me show you. And then something weird happens and we think, oh, he's like inside Venom's mind or something, but it's not actually that
true. All of a sudden he shows up, like we see him again. And the room has changed.
Yeah.
And as soon as they pulled back, I saw the TV and I saw Daily Bugle and I saw J. Jonah Jameson. And I was just waiting for because you hadn't quite caught it yet.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm just waiting for Alex's reaction. And then it pans over and he's in a new room, apparently a new universe, where J. Jonah Jameson is talking about Peter Parker being Spider-Man, and Venom comes over and he was just like, oh, this guy. And he just starts licking the screen.
Yeah.
And then a guy comes in. He's like, what are you doing in my room?
Right.
And Eddie Brock is like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And but yes. So there it is.
So
somehow Eddie Brock has made it through the hive mind, through who knows what.
Just so we're not interrupted going through what we think that might be, let's take a quick break and then we'll jump right into our thoughts. All right, we're back. Now we'll get into more of the movie, but since we're just not talking about it, let's speculate how and what and why that mid-credits scene. So I think what we just witnessed was in Spider-Man No Way Home, Doctor Strange doing voodoo magic.
Messes with stuff.
I can't remember, but my mind is telling me that there was a golden Doctor Strange-esque wave that transitioned that room into something else, which is how we're getting all those big bads from the other films. It would make sense if Venom was one of those that gets tossed into that world.
Huh.
That, or it's even further ahead, and this is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah.
But I personally think what we just saw happens in was the fallout of something that happens in Spider-Man No Way Home that we saw in the trailer.
Yeah. I just had a thought.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's been talking about Toby and Andrew Garfield coming in.
Yeah.
What if they never do? And we were right that it's not our Doctor Strange. It's a different Doctor Strange or somebody acting as Doctor Strange.
There's a rumor that it's Scarlet Witch, but we'll see.
Oh, and they're just like, I've got to take out this Spider-Man. For some reason, he has it up against him, and he's just pulling villains from wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Venom and Doc Ock and Green Goblin.
Yeah.
You know, who knows who else.
So here's one of the issues I have with it already. That mid-credits scene has Venom lusting after Spider-Man, kind of like, I want to eat this kid. I mean, not as forward as that, but it already had a feeling of adversary.
Mm-hmm.
But they've spent two movies now trying to make him a good guy. So I'm very curious to see how they play with that.
Yeah.
Venom has a way longer history of being a villain than he does a hero like he is right now. So, I don't know. We'll just see what happens. That's going to be tricky to navigate. I hope they figure it out. I mean, if anybody's going to, it'll be
figured out.
Kevin Feige and team.
Yeah.
But that's a tall order for me. Back on the movie, there are some good moments, and then there are a whole bunch of not ones.
Yeah.
Comedy moments. There's too much of it. There's too much of the comedy.
Yeah.
They played They played rom-com for too long. There were some moments that were genuinely funny, like laughter was invoked in my body.
Sonny and naturally. Cher.
Sonny and Cher was funny. Even though we saw part of this in the trailer, Venom singing and cooking breakfast.
I never saw the trailer, so.
And there's just one subtle moment. They kind of like encapsulated. This was a nice touch. How annoying it would be to just have a symbiote doing whatever it wanted nonstop to you. So Venom's making all this breakfast and singing and making an absolute mess. And Eddie's just sitting at this table and he looks completely defeated. And Venom like reaches down through all the hallways and then he goes down and grabs his mail.
Yeah.
And he holds it in front of Eddie, who's looking out the window. And then you just see Venom's tendrils slowly caress his face to look at his mail, and it truly made me laugh. It was funny. Yeah. Like, it was just invasive, and it was a nice, subtle touch. That stuff's funny to me. But then they had to go through this whole breakup scene when they finally get Madge, because, of course, they got to make Eddie lose his powers for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, like, Venom's telling him to move out, and they move out of the house from each other, and then they got to destroy the bike, and then Venom has this random night in a nightclub where he feels normal because everybody else is dressed up too.
Looks like it's Dia de los Muertos or something.
Yeah, it looks something like that. And he like has a speech that has A, no reason to exist in the film, and B, no payoff at all. Maybe those are the same thing, 1A and 1B. But he has this moment where he like leaves after his little speech, which is insignificant. Like truly, it does not matter. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I wish Eddie was here to see that or something. It's just kind of like, what? That doesn't make any sense. And then the biggest ball drop on this whole film for me is they absolutely butchered and failed to make Carnage and Cletus Kasady interesting like he is in the comics. Mm. The whole idea in the comics of Cletus Kasady is basically what if the absolute worst type of person, a serial killer who has zero redeeming qualities, gets a hold of a symbiote. Mm-hmm. That's menacing. That's interesting. It's terrifying. And, you know, that works really well in a contrast against, like, something good, like a Spider-Man in the comics having to go against that. We don't get that at all. They spend half the movie trying to make Cletus Kasady look like this tortured soul who was abused and beat up and had a rough childhood and misunderstood and is just trying to save the love of his life, who has also had a similar life. And it just doesn't work if you have any history with that character at all, because it's...
I don't have any history. So, I mean, I still walked away like, Carnage was all right.
Right. It's just... Also, Woody Harrelson's a great actor. He would have made a great villain. Just they don't write to the strengths of that character. Like, the final thing they're doing is, like, as he's dying, he said he just wanted to be Eddie's friend. You know, like, they're just trying to make you, like, a boo-hoo over this guy who's supposed to be pure evil. Now, I understand also that, like, some of the best villains are villains you can sympathize with. You understand or empathize. I don't know, you kind of get it a little bit, you know. But in my opinion, Carnage is not the one to try to do that with. Like, it's sometimes it's okay for them to just be a villain, for them to just be bad, to have a true contrast of good versus evil. And they try to shoehorn complexity into Carnage. Also, there were just a lot of cheesy one-liners. I felt like they wasted Woody Harrelson. Now Carnage is gone. That's another iconic character. I mean, maybe he's gone. I guess that's one that maybe would be easier to bring back than others.
I mean, Venom did eat him.
He ate him, right?
He ate both the symbiote and Woody Harrelson's head.
And then they had to use their F-bomb.
Yeah.
At the very end. During the moment where they're trying to redeem Cletus Kasady, because Venom, like, Cletus is, like, pleading, I just want to be your friend. And then Venom goes, F this guy, and then eats him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, okay. And it was, here's what's unfortunate about it, is that it got a lot of laughs.
Yeah.
The room that we were in the IMAX, most people laughed.
Well,
they liked it.
Let's be honest. The last two movies I've gone to you with, I have had very little enjoyment coming from the people around me. Like, people are so rude and loud now.
Yeah.
And like the wrong type of people are laughing. Like, I could tell, like, there's people that are like, the whole time. And yeah. I'm just like, people need to get out more.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because they're taking all these low hanging fruit jokes. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's talk about when he's like chasing things with Venom and he's hanging on to the side of the building. And then his ex-girlfriend calls.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this from 300 miles away. What are they going to say? Right. The guy's hanging here. He's on a phone.
So just hanging out.
What are you up to?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just hanging out. Boo. Don't do that. That's low hanging fruit. And then of course the whole audience.
Low hanging fruit.
Yeah. Low hanging fruit. Yeah. That was a better joke than what was in the movie. It was just bad. Man, I'm liking this movie less. I'm talking about it. I need to stop. You have not seen this yet either.
No.
We're spoiling everything. Why do you hang out with us? You should still watch it.
We talked about naming this this episode. We watched Venom, so you don't have to.
Yeah, and that's still not out of the ballpark yet. We might still be swinging for that one. Any other thoughts? It could be so much more than it was.
I mean, I enjoy the way that Tom Hardy and whoever is voicing the Venom.
Like, I think it's him. They just.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think they
work together.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe whenever they get under the auspice, I don't know if that's the right term, of Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
Maybe things
and squad. I hope so. I love Tom Hardy. He's a great actor. It's just, to me, I think it's just bad writing. They tried to make it really short, which didn't help this film. You got to like really have some pretty concise storytelling to have a 90-minute film and have it like make sense just in the context of everything. That's to their defense. They're being compared to the entirety of the MCU constantly, which is a very unfair bar, yeah. But it's the bar we're going to use nonetheless. Like it's where we're at. So I don't know what they're going to do. I hope they figure it out. I don't even have a hope for the direction of it because nobody knows what they're going to do in the MCU. But they have a lot of talent. They have a lot of money. They're just telling the wrong types of stories for me to really care. Any other thoughts?
No.
Nothing? Nada?
Yeah.
We have more to look forward to. We have Hawkeye and Eternals and Spider-Man No Way Home in the coming months. That will be nice. I'm confident that those will all be solid.
Yeah. I mean, I keep just thinking this was a Sony property in association with Marvel. So
I know it's infinitely more complex than this.
Yeah.
But you do just wish that they'd be like, you know what? Spider-Man belongs with the MCU. Mm-hmm. You guys can have it. Yeah. That will never happen.
Just give us a cut.
Especially now.
Big cut.
Yeah. They just need to do something. Disney needs to buy Sony, except I also don't actually think that that's a good idea. The MCU and fan in me is not paying attention to monopolies and wants that to happen, but the rational human being doesn't want that to happen.
How long has it been since you played a game of Monopoly?
Maybe a year.
Wow, it's better than me. What about you?
I have it on my phone. So I play it every now and then.
Okay. I haven't played in years.
Yeah. I have a love-hate relationship with that game.
Maybe we should release a video to Monopoly.
Yeah. They've got to make a Marvel Monopoly, right? That's got to be a thing.
Oh, sure.
Surely.
Quit calling me Shirley.
Please comment and let us know what billboard and parkway would be on a Marvel Monopoly. Give us some good answers.
Stark Industries or
something.
Avengers
Tower.
Yeah. Or Wakanda.
Asgard. Well, depending on when it's happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, who knows? Or would it be like an Infinity Stone or an Infinity Gauntlet in Mjolnir?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I guess it needs to be places, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not items.
Yeah.
Can't go to the Infinity Gauntlet.
Or what was that really fancy place Guardians of the Galaxy went to? The gold.
Oh. you know.
I feel like that would be one of the high ones.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of, James Gunn said that the Christmas special, The Guardians of the Galaxy, is going to introduce a very iconic character. And my money is on Adam Warlock.
Oh, okay.
Also, second and third bets would be like Silver Surfer.
Mm, yeah.
Or Galactus, maybe. Yeah. Which those are kind of a package deal. Yeah. And then like a Dark Horse, maybe we'll see some Doctor Doom. I'm so ready. We need Fantastic Four to happen. And I'm That'd still standing John Krasinski and his magnificent wife, Emily Blunt.
Who has no desire.
You know what? I bet she has a desire to get some of that MCU Disney money. Yeah. Who would say no to that? What movie do you hate?
I bet Tom Cruise would say no.
Tom Cruise is an idiot.
I feel like he's... Like, there's a bunch of people who are, like, so anti-MCU
for the filmmaking.
Which is why I was surprised to see Angelina Jolie.
Because I've always considered her being one of those. They go out of their way to talk bad about the MCU. Like, what's your problem, bro?
Just let people like what they like.
Yeah. You're just mad because you haven't been tapped to direct one of them yet and get a fat paycheck. If you're telling me if Martin Scorsese, wasn't he one of them?
Yeah, I think so.
Martin Scorsese, who makes some great films. I think he also got some other issues, if I remember right. Anyway, somebody walked up to him and said, hey, we'll give you all the money and the left Mickey Mouse ear to make Howard the Duck v. Deadpool, which is like a silly Marvel movie.
Yeah,
you going to tell him he's going to say no? Get out of here. Get out of here.
I don't think they would.
How much money, though? I mean, I don't know. Money is a lot of money. Yeah, I would do it. I would make any film for money.
Gosh, you really wouldn't need money, though. I mean, that's what I don't understand. Like, so many of them have so much money already. I don't know.
I mean, all jokes aside and the silliness, I am perplexed to why they keep going out of their way to be like, those aren't real movies. That's not real cinema.
I think they're just jealous of the popularity versus their movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, what these are, superhero films are the modern Westerns, right? Like, Westerns for a long time were like the films to go see. Just like in the mid-2000s, there was a massive surge of just comedies, right? Like, Will Ferrell was it. Like, you got Will Ferrell or Jack Black in your movie, it's going to do well. And now we're in superheroes.
And then vampires. Well, vampires before the superheroes.
Yeah. And then there was like the whole dystopian YA book conversion. Like that's how it works. Now, I do think superheroes are going to be here for much longer than those were. They've already been around for what?
Yeah.
13, 14, 15 years. Longer if you 2000? Consider like Blade.
Yeah.
You know, that era. But
the modern
2008 for Spider.
But I mean, like, I'd say I go back to 2000 for X-Men.
Spider-Man, X-Men, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's when things started getting serious and not just.
For sure. Like,
are you going to watch a superhero movie?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I don't have any other thoughts. Anything from you, fellas?
No.
I see how I brought fellas back around. That's called bookending in the industry.
Nice.
The podcasting industry. All right, you know what? I kept telling myself yesterday that at the very front of the episode was when we're going to do all our social media plugs because I got a feeling that not everybody makes it to the end. But if you did make it to the end, it would be really helpful if you would leave a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else that you can leave reviews. Those go a long way to helping us spread our content. You can also follow us on our social media accounts. Drew, where are those?
You can find us at Two Man Comic Book with the number 2 on Twitter, Two Man Comic Book Club on Facebook and Instagram. Give us a phone call. Tell us if you saw Venom, 66 Two Man Fan 8, or shoot us an email, twomancomicbookclub@gmail.com. Or better yet, interact with us directly by joining our Discord. Link in the show notes /description.
I'm looking to see if we've had any reviews. I don't think we have. I checked the other day.
While you're looking, I'll say you can also find me at Drew Morris Comp on Twitter, Drew Morris Composer. Elsewhere, go to my website, drewmorrismusic.com. Torrance, where can they find you?
Nope.
Ooh. a hard shutdown, Alex. You can find me at Alex Wayne Miller on all social media platforms. Wayne is W-A-Y-N-E, just like Bruce Wayne. As always, I am Batman, which is kind of weird. Nobody's like, I keep saying that and nobody questions it.
It's just, you know, you just look like you belong and you belong.
All right, I'll take it. Like and subscribe to our YouTube channel if you're watching this here. If you haven't seen one of the episodes on YouTube, go check it out. It's pretty cool, especially when we do the comic ones. We throw the panels up on there, a little more immersive. You can see the art that we're talking about. And more importantly, you get to see Drew and my beautiful face.
I haven't trimmed my beard in a while. Don't look too close.
Yeah. Otherwise, that's been it. We'll see y'all next time. Bye. The Two Man Comic Book Club podcast is hosted by Alex Miller and Drew Morris. Our guy in the chair is Torrance Watkins. Logos and design work are by Tessa Price. Original theme music and compositions are by Drew Morris. Check, check, check. Alex Miller is my name. Podcasting's my game.
Check, check. Me too.